Sex, Drugs, Telepathy, Etc. by Spurk Me. Read by Cookie Mom 6067. I have the perfect idea for tonight, Cybok says. Spock does not deign to lift his gaze from the book in his hands. His half-brother's words imply mutual agreement toward collective action. They imply a lack of options for filling their time in the Vulcan embassy. They imply a rebelliousness that Spock cannot currently afford, his own rebelliousness being the precise reason for his exile to Earth. No, he replies. Come on, baby brother, it's Saturday night. That may not mean anything on Vulcan, but need I remind you, oh dear one, we are no longer on Vulcan. He is aware. It takes a mere glance outside the embassy windows to view downtown San Francisco sprawled beyond the glass, that the grounds of Starfleet Academy sit just to the east of this Vulcan stronghold would be a cruel twist of fate, but Spock does not believe in fate. He does, however, believe in his father's unyielding capacity for punishment and his mother's expansive capacity for kindness. It is these warring factors that led him to this exact place at this exact time. His father wishes for him to fully comprehend the harm he caused the House of Sarek when he stood in front of the Vulcan Council and rejected their offer of admission to the Vulcan Science Academy. Thus, Sarek utilizing his influence to defer Spock's acceptance to Starfleet Academy for the last 3 years, perhaps permanently. His mother understood that he would be lost to them forever if he were forced to remain on Vulcan, thus his relocation to Earth, her home. It is not lost on him that Cybok accompanying him was both a punishment and a kindness. It's been 3 years since you left the embassy grounds, exactly 3 years to the day. If you can't be at the academy, then let me give you a taste of the experience. Cybok holds up a translucent pill that glimmers in the firelight. I promise it won't corrupt your shields or controls. Intriguing. Spock narrows his eyes. What will it do? Make everything a bit, oh, let's say, softer. Soft sounds acceptable. So much has been a battle as of late, and he is quite frankly depleted from the effort. Curious, Spock studies the glimmering pill. There are very few substances on Terra that have any effect on Vulcans, yet it appears as if Cybok has procured, tested, and cataloged them all during their stay. While their biology may differ, and Cybok can be a consummate instigator of mischief, as the humans say, a prankster, Cybok would not harm him. Of this, Spock is sure. How long for it to take effect? Cybok drops the pill in Spock's hand. You'll be gliding by the time we exit the delivery gate. Gliding? Cybok smiles. Spock swallows the pill. Excellent choice, Cybok says. He downs three, chasing them with a gulp of cold tea. Now let's get dressed. By the time they exit the embassy grounds, Cybok solely in a pair of leather pants, a feathered boa around his neck, and flip-flops, Spock in a black t-shirt and slacks, Spock doesn't feel like he's gliding as much as he is floating. The weakness of Earth's gravity weighs on him even less, the soles of his boots barely brushing the pavement as he's propelled into the night. San Francisco becomes a blur of color and movement, and Spock wishes to streak his hands through it like paint, to taste the life, to hear the scent of these streets. He pushes through black, is severed by green, gold snags him, catches him, but it is the red that makes him fall, fall, fall. Logical? No. However, since his telepathic shields remain intact and he is not grinning like the Cheshire Cat, as Cybok is, Spock finds the result of the glimmering pill acceptable. You, Dad, and Sulkar, Cybok huffs. Spock blinks. They are no longer on the street, yet he has no memory of entering a building or of ordering the silvery drink in his hand. Kaith. He takes an experimental sip, then two more. To what do you refer? You, Dad, and Sulkar, Cybok repeats. He tips his chin toward a booth at the back. All of you, hooked on humans. Spock follows his brother's gaze and, yes, he remembers now, a black door, drinks served by an Orion bartender, then his attention snagged by the gold of sun-kissed hair, breath stolen by a sly smile on reddened lips. The human at the center of the booth flicks his gaze toward Spock, and a slow, lazy heat slips through Spock's veins. Perhaps his brother is correct. However, he does not want to think about either his father or forefather in this moment. In your study of Starfleet Academy customs, Spock asked, did a taste of the experience include a one-night encounter based solely on physical release? Cybok laughs. Oh, very much so, little brother. This time when he moves, it is a glide, a pull that feels gravitational. He finds that apt. For tonight, this particular sun-kissed human shall be the center of his universe. Standing in front of the booth, he holds the human's gaze when he says, I desire for you to be inside of me. The other humans at the booth gape or snicker. One rolls his eyes. Spock pays them no heed because the human is smiling. Your place or mine. Follow me if you wish to find out. The effects of Cybok's pill are not dwindling, and Spock is pleased by that. His shields and controls remain in place. However, the part of him that should be deterring him from taking this action, the internal voice that sounds suspiciously like Sarek, stays silent. He does not hesitate to procure them a room at a local hotel, avoiding both the embassy and the chance that the human's dwelling place may not be suitably private. The human walks in step with Spock, his strides just as long, his enthusiasm a warm press against Spock's psionic field. The lift doors close behind them, and the silence between them stretches as they ascend. Spock chooses not to fracture it, instead inhaling the human scent deeply. He has heard of Vulcans utilizing nasal suppressants due to the overpowering nature of human biology, the oils on their skin, their indiscriminately secreted hormones and pheromones, their sweat. Spock finds the mixture nearly as intoxicating as that glimmering pill. Or perhaps it is this particular human scent that he finds arousing. Have you ever been with a Vulcan sexually? He asks. There's a sputter at his side, then the clearing of a throat. Spock lifts an eyebrow and studies the human. A blush has risen on his cheeks. And his eyes, when the human meets Spock's gaze, his eyes are a shade of blue that cannot be found on Vulcan. Nope. Have you ever been with a human? I have not. The sly smile returns. Then this is going to be fun. It is not Vulcan to do so, but Spock agrees. The doors of the lift glide open, followed by the door to their room, but it is the gravitational pull of this particular human that draws Spock in, closer and closer, ready to fall. He steps into the human's personal space and out of his own with chemically induced ease. Whether that's the pill or pheromones is no longer of consequence. The human leans in, a catch in his breath, his heartbeat picking up speed. Emboldened by his reaction, Spock steps closer. What do you desire? Spock asks. Everything, the human rasps. I really want to touch you. Can I touch you? While my intimate experience with humans is non-existent, I believe that will be necessary for a sexual congress. The human laughs and a fizz echoes in Spock's bones. His vision shimmers, and he cannot be certain that is an effect of the pill. When the human inches closer, head canted, hands hovering at the precipice, Spock wants to inhale the man's touch. Needs to, but millimeters separate them, an ocean, a universe, when the human says, shit, before we do anything, you might want to know who I am. Does he? The glimmering pill tells him that he should not care. The gravitational pull tells him that he must know, that it's important to know. He tilts his head, waits. It's Jim. The human, Jim, clears his throat. James T. Kirk. the son of George Kirk, the captain of the Kelvin, deceased, heroic by human standards. Spock had not intended to reciprocate, and yet he says, I am Spock. The son of Sarek, the ambassador to Earth, very much alive, cold by human standards. Like Jim, his name says it all. Jim's tongue darts out to wet his lips. He grins. Oh, yeah, this is going to be fun. Gravity pulls, a rush in the descent. Jim's arms encase him and hold him fast. Jim's kiss consumes, neither tentative nor gentle, the primal part of Spock, the part that is not as dormant as it should be, shivers hungrily in response. Clothes are not shed as much as they are torn, tossed, discarded in a heap. Spock's hands wrest control, leading the exploration of carved muscles, soft swells, and the coiling of desire. He licks at a bead of sweat at the hollow of Jim's throat. Jim's heartbeat thunders under his lips. Jim's moan propels Spock to his knees. Jim's scent is stronger here, headier. Spock inhales deeply as Jim's lock brushes across his cheek, the skin soft. It is so unlike his own, so smooth and fragile, so unprotected. Yet Spock is quite sure that the human race would have died out thousands of years ago if it were as vulnerable as it appears, so he takes what he wants. Jim's hands slide into Spock's hair, cradling the back of his head with a tenderness that belies the thrust of his hips. The dichotomy sends Spock's head spinning, every thought but Jim cast off into the ether. To be used yet cared for is not a drug he expected to experience tonight. He urges Jim's lock deeper into his throat. Desire flows from Jim's skin and into Spock's fingertips, etching sun-kissed gold and light into his veins. Jim's moan washes over him, and he drowns in bliss. Spock! Jesus! Hands tighten in Spock's hair. When Spock looks up, Jim's chest heaves with a ragged breath. If you really want me to fuck you, then I'm gonna need you to stop. He licks Jim's lock from base to tip before he draws back, drinking in more of Jim's intoxicating scent. I have heard that the human refractory period is inconvenient. Definitely, Jim says on an exhale. His fingers remain tangled in Spock's hair. And definitely too long for everything I want to do with you. I take it that's not a Vulcan problem. It is not. Jim smirks. Challenge accepted. Spock surrenders even more of himself to the pull of Jim. He cedes his trajectory to Jim's hands as he is lifted, guided, and laid out, exposed and ready. Jim's kiss aligns them head to feet, two bodies spiraling together in a new configuration. The heat of sweat-slick skin presses him into the cool sheets, but it is a roughened human hand sliding over his sheath that stokes the need for release building under his skin. Despite Jim's admitted lack of experience with Vulcans, that roughened human hand grants Spock his first release minutes later, the second with his lock buried in Jim's throat, the third and fourth with a strategic assault of tongue, lips, nips of teeth, and Spock's natural slick coating Jim's fingers, driving deep inside him. God, I haven't come yet, and I don't even care, Jim says. His lips are swollen, voice raspy. He pushes Spock's legs further apart and licks into his sheath before those un-Vulcan blue eyes are focused on him. Watching you get off is fucking addictive. Spock is gliding, floating. A fizz echoes in his bones. He is entirely sure those are no longer the effects of the glimmering pill. Use me, however you desire, Jim. Jim is talking about his time at Starfleet Academy. What started as an intention for a one-night encounter based solely on physical release blurred into two nights, then a second morning. And while Jim has more than succeeded in testing the limits of Spock's non-existent refractory period, as well as prove that the human refractory period is neither as inconvenient nor lengthy as he first claimed, their encounter is not solely about physical release anymore. They lie together on the rumpled bed, Jim's head on Spock's chest and hand over his heart, their legs entwined. Warm breath gusts over Spock's skin as Jim speaks about his classes, his classmates, and his aspirations for the future. Spock rests his hand at the back of Jim's neck, fingertips grazing the delicate curve of Jim's ear, his psionic field infused with the gold of Jim's contentment. Spock finds he is just as content. "Anyway, you should come visit me on campus." If he were fully human, then this would be the point in their conversation when Spock's contentment would flounder. However, what is, I cannot. So, the rumors are true. To what rumors do you refer? That you told the Vulcan High Council to fuck off when they offered you a place at the VSA despite your mom's thin Terran blood polluting your veins, and your dad repenzled you instead of allowing you to attend Starfleet Academy. It takes Spock a moment to parse the underlying meaning of Jim's words, but once he does, he finds the comparison to a Terran fairy tale apt. Jim's summary of his response to the High Council's speciesism is even more applicable. He calculates the likelihood of Cybok being the source of the rumors at 99.999%. They are true. Jim laughs. The sound seeps through Spock's fingertips and into his veins. What I would pay to see a hollow of how that all went down. Jim rests his chin on Spock's chest, gazing up at him. You'd look stunning in science blues. Spock merely raises one eyebrow in response. Don't look so scandalized. I know that you know exactly how gorgeous I think you are. Spock's hand stills at Jim's nape. His telepathy is a subject they have not broached, despite the hours they've spent skin to skin. Have I made you uncomfortable, Jim? Jim shakes his head. The opposite. I mean, if you wanted it, and I wanted it, and I'll skip to the spoiler, I want it bad, and I know you do too. How deep could you get inside my head? As deep as you wish. Fuck, okay. Next time, skip the seedier parts, but anything that's going to make this even better? Yeah, go for it. Spock must ask. You desire a next time? Definitely. Very well, Jim. The next time comes much sooner than Spock anticipated, in a matter of minutes, not days or weeks. Jim's lock slides into him with ease. Jim's body drapes over him. Jim's kiss is familiar, in a way that makes Spock ache with need. His fingertips find Jim's sigh points unerringly, and the moan that spills from Jim's lips sends a shiver up Spock's spine. Spock's fall is just as inevitable as he knew it would be, but he did not anticipate that Jim would fall with him. He slides just as easily into Jim's mind as Jim did into his body, their desires in sync, their movements, their breaths. Spock surrenders even more of his shields, and he is engulfed in gold and light. He foregoes the past and brings forth all that is now. This moment, this joining, two bodies coming together in a configuration that aches with familiarity yet is new. Spock whispers to Jim in Golic, cants his hips, and Jim drives deeper inside him, harder. Fire builds in Spock's veins, and its soul falling hot on the sands of Vulcan. A challenge they both accept, a future not yet written and just as inevitable as the fever that will bond him to another someday. Only me, Jim thinks. Only I get to have you like this. The Vulcan in Spock, the part that is not as dormant as it should be, aches to claim, be claimed. The human in Spock says, not yet, not yet. Then give me whatever you can, Jim rasps against his lips. Use me however you want, Spock. Spock drives deeper into Jim's mind, harder. Jim's kiss bruises his lips. He spirals into the center of their new universe, teasing the edges of what could be, the need to be used yet cared for coalescing in Jim's veins. He takes of Jim's desire and gives Jim heightened physical sensation, as well as more than a hint of Vulcan stamina, threading a feedback loop that brings them dangerously close to something he cannot reverse. Right there. Fuck, right there, Spock. For minutes that stretch outside his comprehension, Spock exists in the physical, the mental, and the ethereal. Long past the effects of that glimmering pill, the fever in him matching the heat of a mind entirely too compatible with his own. When they come, it is as one, almost quite literally. It is the closest Spock has ever been to another sentient being, and he does not desire separation. So he doesn't. His fingertips remain at Jim's side points when Jim collapses on top of him, their lips fused together and Jim's locks still buried deep, as if he, too, cannot bear to sever their connection. The potential for a bond lingers well within his reach. Next time, Spock does not know if he will be able to resist. They shower together, dress together, and while Spock's previous encounters did not include humans, they most certainly did not include anyone like James T. Kirk, so he could not have anticipated that their parting would occur like this. Jim, standing near the hotel door, in a newly replicated Starfleet cadet uniform, his cap dangling from a finger and a smirk planted on his lips. Check your comm. I sent you something so you don't forget me. Odd, as he did not provide his personal comm information to Jim, and yet not unexpected. Jim grasps hold of what he wants without shame. No, the unexpected comes after Jim departs with one last lingering kiss. The door closes behind him, and Spock picks up his comm, silenced and abandoned days ago. He bypasses a string of messages from Cybok, each likely lewd or frantic, perhaps both, and opens an encrypted message sent minutes ago. It is a looping 3-second hollow of Jim, shirtless, blowing a kiss, then raising it to all. His lips are curved into that familiar arch of self-satisfaction. His skin bears the reddened traces of Spock's hands and mouth. A window pops up, prompting Spock to either save the message or delete it. He taps save without hesitation, though even without his eidetic memory or this calm, he is quite sure he could not forget these last 2 days. He could not have anticipated Jim. Back to the drudgery of the mines, little brother, Cybok asks as he saunters into the room. Spock does not deign to lift his gaze from the book in his hands. His half-brother's question implies that for a time Spock found escape. It implies a conscious choice to return to his overseer and resign himself to darkness instead of light. It implies a course of action that is much too accurate. Spock does not reply. Cybok flops into the chair next to Spock's with an audible and overly dramatic huff. The cup of tea in his hands is likely as cold as it was the night he coaxed Spock out of the embassy for the first time in 3 years. He does not offer a glimmering pill. It has been 7 days since he left the hotel room he shared with Jim. In that time, he has without shame avoided Cybok, choosing instead to meditate on his time outside the embassy walls. If he finds himself residing mostly in the room that overlooks the academy campus, then that is solely because it affords him a distance from the Vulcan staff and a fireplace that chases the chill of Terra from his bones. His personal comm rests on the table next to him, silent, just as it has been for the last 7 days. Do you think he ghosted you, or are you refusing to answer his comms? Spock continues to read. Come on, baby brother. It was supposed to be one night and turned into two. Something good had to come out of that. I mean, besides the obvious. At his brother's persistence in pursuing information on distinctly personal matters, Spock chooses not to suppress his sigh. Cybok laughs. Well, it's obvious you made an impression on him since he's outside the gate asking for you. Spock lifts his gaze to Cybox. And it must have been a good impression since he's in full dress uniform. Jim is here. That is what I just said. He attempts to smother the racing of his heartbeat. I cannot. Yes, Spock. Cybok replies with a gravity that is emphatic. Rare. You can. Despite his eidetic memory, Spock does not quite remember how he makes it to the front gate. He is perilously close to gliding, floating, pulled by a force that should not be as powerful as it is. Jim indeed stands on the sidewalk in a cadet's dress uniform, cap dangling from his fingertips, lips arching in self-satisfaction when their eyes meet. Spock clasps his hands behind his back as he descends the steps and approaches the gate, steeling himself against the need to touch, to reconnect. He has perhaps spent too much time in the last 7 days watching a certain 3-second hollow. I would have calmed, Jim says. He props a shoulder against the gate separating them, leaning in. But I gotta be honest, Spock, I wanted to see you in person. It is not wise for you to be here. Oh, yeah, I know, but is it welcome? The insecurity in Jim's voice softens something deep inside Spock. He edges closer to the gate, to Jim. It is. Jim's laugh mingles with a relieved exhale. Good. I'm sorry I haven't reached out since I needed to. A complete sentence would facilitate further conversation, Jim. It would, yeah. You were unsure how you would be received by me. No. Well, not after, you know. Spock does. Their meld is indelibly etched into his Katra, too. But then I needed to do something before I calmed you again, and it took way longer than I thought it would, and complete silence really isn't the best thing after... Jim's gaze flicks to the security cameras lining the embassy walls, and he clears his throat. After that, and... a sigh. Jim inhales deeply, then curls his fingers into the metal of the gate. I couldn't be sure that I hadn't broken something because it's been too long. Jim, you did not. You're sure? Vulcans cannot lie. Right, Jim says, easing. There's no work around there because you're half-human? Despite the rumors, my mother's thin Terran blood does not, in fact, pollute my veins. Jim laughs, and Spock draws closer to his light, drowning in eyes that are a shade of blue that cannot be found on Vulcan, his orbit realigning. Do you have any plans I'm interrupting? Jim says quietly. I do not. Then I have the perfect idea for tonight. Spock lifts an eyebrow. The brass are having a get-together at the Academy, hence the monkey suit. It's a Federation event, some kind of a soiree, honoring someone or something important, I don't really know. The important part is that your dad is off-planet, so there's no Vulcan representation. So I talked to Pike and snagged you a ticket. The insecurity has returned to Jim's voice. Spock is unsure why until Jim adds, and the really important part maybe is that Pike would like to talk to you about the Academy, if you want that. Spock stills. Captain Christopher Pike. Of the USS Enterprise. Starfleet's flagship, yeah, one and the same. Speaking from personal experience here, he has just a bit of pull when it comes to admissions, and apparently, there's one particular student he had hoped would enroll 3 years ago. Or, you know, you could stay here, Jim shrugs, pushes back from the gate. So, what'll it be, Spock? Your place or mine? Spock keys in the code to the gate, then opens it. Follow me if you wish to find out, Jim. The end.